Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I am Jay Skursky, joined by a special esteemed guest this time in Matt Perino, my buddy and Buffalo Bills beat writer for Syracuse.com, New York Upstate, and podcast, expert maybe is the right word, aficionado, maven, wherever we want to go with this, but host of the Shout Bills podcast, which is doing great things, along with Ryan Talbot. Matt Perino is his name. Also, baseball, basketball. What else do you coach? A lot of stuff.
That's it. We're trying to eliminate things that we coach here, Jay.
we'll talk about that. That could be a later segment for another podcast, but let's get right to it, Matt. First of all, thank you very much for joining me. Perrin Keyes is traveling today, and so we brought in a special guest for this episode, and I'm really appreciative of Matt for joining me. But let's get right to it, Matt. Bills no longer undefeated. No team in the NFL actually undefeated at this point now. Both the Eagles and Bills losing yesterday. Very frustrating fashion for the Bills and their fans. They lose the turnover battle. They offensively, I think, struggled more than we've seen at times this season. And the end result is 20 points and a 23-20 loss to the New England Patriots at Highmark Stadium. And Matt, I think, and you would, tell me if you agree, most of the chatter that I've gotten after this game had to do with the wide receivers and the lack of separation. Josh Allen statistically didn't have a terrible game, but it was really Dalton Kincaid and then a lot of inconsistency amongst his pass catchers. And this is a topic that we have been down this road before, the wide receivers for this team. What did you make of their overall group effort last night?
Yeah, I think like in a game like this where it all kind of started to go off the rails was the Bills got bullied a little bit, right? And they're used to bullying other teams. When you can't do what you do best, which is run the ball with James Cook, he averaged 3.3 yards per carry, you need another pitch to go to that's as good as your fastball. And to me right now with this collection of players, I thought Dalton Kincaid had his best game as a Buffalo Bill, and it still wasn't enough. Because on the outside, to your point, when it comes down to separation, and this was a big part of the offseason conversation around wide receiver Brandon Bean's infamous WGR radio hit and how that conversation has transpired since then, is there's not a guy on this roster right now that you can count on to win one-on-one. I think what they said after they signed Josh Palmer to a $13 million contract per season this offseason was, we like his ability to separate, to win against man coverage. We haven't seen it consistently enough. They needed somebody to be open a little bit more. Now, did Josh Allen have some moments in this game where he wasn't probably where you needed him to be, whether it be staying in the pocket when he decided to evade the pocket, some of the decisions that he made? But you still look at his stats at the end of the game, and they were pretty good. And a lot of these all 22 views or these, big drop back views are a bunch of receivers that were covered.
Yeah, I mean, Palmer, 2 catches, 36 yards. And I think one of those catches was, correct me if I'm wrong, the very last play of the game, which was, the ultimate prayer, right? Keon Coleman, 7 targets, 4 catches, 23 yards. One of them was for a touchdown. But, Coleman, it's a tough living in the NFL for Keon Coleman because he's asked to make ridiculous catches pretty much every time because he doesn't separate, right? And so you look at that 3rd-and-10 fade route to him earlier in the game, and it's just, I'm sitting next to Sal Majorana, our buddy, our cranky old buddy from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, and he and I both kind of say, we just absolutely hate that play call, right? What is the success rate of that play going to be, And to your point about Palmer, a good opening, right, against the Ravens in week one, but where has it been since then? I mean, it's been 1, 2, maybe 3 catches a game. And, Khalil Shakir gives you what he gives you, 6 catches, 45 yards. That's about what we've come to expect from him, right? Pretty consistent. He's a reliable slot target, but they're not winning on the outside. And, we knew with Keon Coleman that he was going to have to make tough catches. And I don't want to pin all of this on Palmer. I mean, and we'll talk about it later in the show. Some of this is Joe Brady, right, too, and finding ways to get guys open. But, it was a concern. I'm glad you mentioned it. The infamous rant that Bean went on, it was a concern ahead of the season, one that was shared amongst the fan base, in the media, There's a reason that he was asked about this group of players so often, and it's because I think there were legitimate concerns about him. And listen, everybody eats is a great philosophy, and I understand the reasoning behind it, but when you have a game like this where you score 20 points, it's very easy to point the finger at that and say, is this the best idea for this team? And it's especially easy when the guy on the other side kills you, right? 10 catches for 146 yards. And oh, by the way, he used to be here, right? It's Stefon Diggs. That's what a number one wide receiver looks like. That's what a number one wide receiver can do for the offense. And so I think Diggs going off the way he did certainly is not a great look for the Bills and their current collection of wide receivers.
Yeah, and I think backing up to the Keon Coleman point, like to me, the move to draft him was to make him your number one wide receiver over the course of his rookie contract. When you spend basically a borderline first round draft pick asset on a wide receiver like that, it's got to hit. And you look at what's going on in Kansas City right now, the way that offense looks when Xavier Worthy isn't on the field versus when he's back and part of that offense. And they don't even have Rashee Rice back in the mix yet, another talented player that they hit on in the draft. The problem is the Bills just haven't hit consistently enough or been willing to use draft assets on wide receivers. I mean, the Keon Coleman pick was as polarizing a pick as he could have made in that spot. And the other part of it is, it's like it almost feels like the Bills at times think that they're going to outsmart the football world. Like everybody was saying, from draft and evaluator, people inside the league, people inside college football, Keon Coleman is a big slot receiver. He's not fast enough or quick enough on the outside to win consistently as an X. He needs to be more of like a Drake London mold. Well, what do the Bills do? They draft him to be this, to cast him in a role he can't play, while not only having Khalil Shakir in the slot, but also having Dalton Kincaid, somebody that they want to work in the middle of the field. I just think the collection of players that they've put together, there's you could see a vision for most of them, but in terms of what you're asking them to do at a high-end level, look at the Eagles in the Super Bowl last year. When things went bad, you have AJ Brown to go to. You have DeVonta Smith, a first-round draft pick. The Bills just don't have those horses on the roster at the position right now.
Harry the Hammer here. You know, heating and cooling your home is getting very expensive. Replacing your windows is the best way to keep those costs down. Right now, Housecrafters is offering triple pane windows for the price of double pane windows. Call Housecrafters at 646 NAIL.
And Matt, let's turn our attention to the other side of the ball. Defensively, you know, let's start here. 23 points allowed. I think if you said going into the game the Bills would allow 23 points, you'd expect that they would win the game, right? So I think defensively, they did some good things, especially in the first half. You know, it's a 6-3 game at halftime, but we saw some sustained drives from New England in the second half. The pass defense in particular, I thought, really let the Bills down. Sean McDermott singled that area out. We'll get to some of those problems, but first I want to talk about injuries. You know, Ed Oliver, TJ Sanders are out of the lineup. Oliver now 4 games with an ankle injury. I think that's gone on longer than people certainly hoped. You would have liked to have had him in the lineup last night, especially when you watch Drake May kind of bouncing off of would-be sacks. Maybe Ed Oliver finishes some of those plays. But for me, Matt Milano, again, hurt, right? He's back, and he's not out for the second half. Another pectoral injury. I think it's about time that – I think we're looking at the end of Matt Milano's tenure here in Buffalo. We'll see the extent of this injury, you know, whether it's long term or shorter term, but I just don't know how you bring this guy back at this point. You can't rely on him to stay on the field.
I don't think you could bring him back. And I also think when he's ready to play, if and when he's ready to play this season, he's a backup at this point. Shaq Thompson's been better than Matt Milano when he's been on the field. The concern with Shaq Thompson is a guy coming off of 2 leg injuries over the last 2 seasons. But this was a guy that was borderline all-pro caliber player in Carolina at the height of his powers. And when he's been in the game, the defense has just looked a little bit different. They've had more explosive stops. He's been a presence in the backfield. I think he had a sack in this game. Last week against the New Orleans Saints, he made a big play in the fourth quarter when the defense had to have it. When you're looking for bright spots on this defense, to me, Thompson has been that. And we talked to him in the locker room. I mean, this guy's a leader. This is a guy that's, you know, been captain material. And I'm not saying that Matt Milano isn't that. He's revered in the locker room. But it's like, when's the last time that he's played more than 3 games in a row without getting hurt? You got to go back to 2023. And you have a linebacker room right now that's in flux and in, you know, it's a big concern. If Terrell Bernard, who's an undersized middle linebacker who also deals with nagging injuries that pop up over the course of the season, you have Dorian Williams, who reported for training camp looking like a cyborg. I mean, he had a wrap on his elbow, a brace on his elbow, a brace on his knee. This is not a sustainable model. We're talking about, you know, maybe trade deadline targets for the Bills, right? Linebacker might have to enter the chat here over the next couple of weeks if you're going to depend on, if Matt Milano's out for any kind of significant amount of time, a 30-plus veteran who's good when he's out there but also has been banged up at times, Dorian Williams. And then after that, it's a whole lot of undrafted great stories in Jimmy Charlo and Joe Andreessen, but guys that I don't know if you want to rely on for any kind of significant stretch.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. And, you know, we said at the start of this segment, we got to get into the pass defense. It was a bad night, right? You know, you've got Cole Bishop missing, Stephon Diggs wide open in the middle of the field. That turns into a 30-yard gain, sets up Ramondre Stevenson's 7-yard touchdown. We knew there was going to be some inconsistent play with the safeties, right? That came with the territory. You looked at the week one game against Baltimore. I thought the safeties had gotten better. Maybe it was a little bit of a step back for Bishop. You're going to live with that. But the cornerback play, you know, and it's not just Tre'Davious White. And I know he's going to get singled out here by a lot of the fan base. And yeah, he did not have a good night. But, you know, Christian Benford did not look like a number one cornerback, against the Patriots. I mean, they're not afraid to throw at Benford either. And so I think they need better play throughout that group. You know, Maxwell Hairston has missed a long time here, but I think the urgency for him to get back into the lineup or at least into practice to see if he can be something for this defense is really going to be ratcheted up after a performance like that.
The Christian Benford fall off, I mean, really needs to be studied, because this is a guy that, granted, I thought the Bills got great value on the extension based on his play in 2024. What you've seen through four games is a guy that's dramatically overpaid. And I like Christian Benford a lot. I think he's been a steady starting force for them over the last couple of years. He's had his own, you know, bouts of injuries, you know, inability to stay on the field. Tre'Davious White, I tweeted it during the game. When you're clamoring for Jamarcus Ingram to get in the game like that against a divisional rival, that goes to show how bad the situation is at starter. You have the concerns with his tackling ability that popped up in the preseason, but from a coverage perspective against Stephon Diggs, equally old, equally as injured, coming off of an ACL injury last season. I mean, he looked like prime Stephon Diggs, and most of that came against working against Tre'Davious White. We all love Trey White. Like, he's one of the great stories of this season. I just don't think he's a starting caliber NFL cornerback anymore. He's a guy that you probably want to get to 2-3 guys down the line. And you mentioned urgency when it comes to Maxwell Hairston. That's another problem. When is he going to be back? But how close to 100% is he going to be when he does get back? And is that going to be one of those situations where you get him back and you don't trust him for an extended amount of time to get back out in the field? Now you're talking about the living in the in-between, trying to figure out an answer. The Bills might have to get aggressive at the deadline to bring somebody in, or maybe call up a veteran like a Stephon Gilmore who's still out there and Asante Samuel Jr. to figure out, to throw any kind of darts at the board of problems that the Bills have in their secondary.
All right, and Matt, we've been down the kind of the list of culprits on the player side that contributed to this loss. Let's talk a little bit about the coaching, right? And I think, you know, it's an easy arrow to point, right? Or finger to point is at the coaching staff. You know, usually after a game like this, the offensive coordinator is one of the least popular guys in town. And I think there's some truth in that with Joe Brady. I think there is some justifiable criticism in terms of the game plan. You know, I mentioned earlier not liking, you know, some of the calls to Coleman and the difficulty of those, but, you know, it's beyond just, well, they need better receivers who can separate more. I mean, like, scheme them open, right? In some way. I mean, they are NFL players. And so I think that Brady, you know, one of the things that really stood out to me in looking back at Sean McDermott's transcript last night was the phrase, "I thought we got too cute at times." That is really telling, right? You know, because it's not a lot of words, but that feels to me like a direct shot at the game plan of Joe Brady. And, you know, we'll follow up on that later on this afternoon with McDermott and with Brady when we hear from them. But what did you make of that comment in particular from McDermott?
No, I thought it was spot on. And I thought, you know, you're in the first quarter in a divisional game. We spent all week previewing this thing, talking to players inside the locker room. What changes when you go up against a team that knows you so well? This is a team also that knows the value in winning the turnover battle, playing smart complementary football. And what do they do on the very first drive? Call a jet sweep for their mostly blocking tight end in Dawson Knox when you have not done that at all. I mean, we watched practices. Maybe they did it. They threw it in a practice at some point in the summer. I don't remember it. I don't know if I'm pulling that out against the upstart New England Patriots who are coming in here on a mission. You felt that all week. Not only the Stephon Diggs storyline, which is a guy that wants to get his against his former team, but Mike Vrabel is trying to set the culture in New England. This is the kind of, you know, pivotal early win that he can kind of build this thing around. You have to be so smart in how you operate within the game. And I thought that play call at that moment was terrible. I also thought this was kind of the strange game to try to shoehorn Ray Davis in, especially at the goal line, when you've had James Cook cooking the way that he is. I know we talked about it this week about, you know, playing a dangerous game with the usage rate of James Cook early in the season, but that doesn't mean that you should go away from that guy in the high leverage moments of a game against a divisional team that you knew going in was going to bring you everything inside your house.
Absolutely. No question about it. I have no problem getting Ray Davis a carry or two in the game. I mean, they've got to find a way to get him going. And I mean, his utter disappearance from the offense is really hard to figure, but not there, not in that situation. I mean, Cook has been dynamic all year long for you, and it wasn't like he was overworked at all in this game, at least in terms of his, you know, his snap count and his usage. I think it was, what I'm looking at it here, 15 carries, so it's not like he was overwhelmingly just worn out and needed a blow at that part of the, or at that point in the game and at that part of the field, as you mentioned. So yeah, really, really bizarre stuff there from Joe Brady. And you know, what do you think of the defensive game plan? I don't think I had a huge issue with it. I mean, again, you know, I said before in a previous segment, 23 points, you probably feel pretty good about your chances of winning the game. Some problems, though, kind of continue to creep up. You know, the tackling, they're not able to bring guys down in the open field when they should. The inability to get Drake May on the ground on that last drive when they had the opportunities and the looks to do so. I don't know how much of that you put on coaching necessarily, but you would certainly like to see a little bit more finish from those guys. And when for a team that stresses fundamentals the way that the Bills do, and you hear it all the time from Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich, they're not showing up when they need them to. That lack of fundamentals is kind of exposing itself at the worst times.
I have a bit of a problem with Sean McDermott at times when, in a game like yesterday, it feels like he's throwing shots at the offense, which for the most part, especially in big time playoff games over the years, has been the side of the ball that's really done their job. You know, you go back early in the season and when Derrick Henry's running down their throat and Lamar Jackson is having the game of his career or of his season to start the year. And I thought the defense did everything they could to lose that game in that moment. And I thought down the stretch, of course, you want Josh Allen to make the plays. You don't want the interception when he threw it there. But you need your defense to come up with another stop. I think that that's worth mentioning, the fact that against a Steelers team, I don't think their Steelers defense is as good as the Bills, but they came up with the stops against Drake May in week two to get that win 21-14 when the offense wasn't having its best day. And sometimes you're going to have days like this. You're going to turn the ball over. You're going to deal with an officiating crew that just had flags out on every single play. I mean, there were a couple plays in this game where I was like absolutely floored. There was a Spencer Brown alignment penalty early in the game. There was a Khalil Shakir, what I thought was a DPI that wasn't called. You could talk that up and down, and that's not really a storyline I want to focus on too much. But to me, I felt like the defense had a chance to really make a play down the stretch, and they didn't, and the offense really got going down the stretch. One thing that I want to ping back to you is, what was the best version of the Bills defense over the last couple of years? To me, it was when Sean McDermott was calling the defense, and I know there was a lot on his plate, but to me, Bobby Babich is great in front of a microphone. I think that a lot of guys really like him in the room, but if we're talking about commanding this defense and getting it on the right track, it's going to look a lot different in a couple of weeks. There could potentially be five new players playing and maybe even starting for this team when Oliver gets back, if Hairston finds his way back into the rotation, if the two suspended players get back. This could change a lot. But as we move through the season, if this defense continues to be a problem, Sean McDermott fired Ken Dorsey in the middle of the season. Is he capable of doing that with Bobby Babbage? I think it's something that may have to be considered if things continue on this trend.
I don't know that his job is in jeopardy, Babbage's, but I do think the possibility of the play calling duties going back to McDermott are maybe more on the table now than they ever have been. I've for a long time thought you need to let Babbage grow into the role, right? But there also needs to be some accountability. And there, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because as we're sitting here recording this, I see my email pop up and the question is for the mailbag. Should Bobby Babbage be stripped of his play calling, right? So it's being talked about, right? It's a topic of conversation. I think needs to be a consideration right now. And that is, you know, that's not a good sign for the defense at this point in the season, but there has to be accountability. There has to be, you know, we can't keep hearing gap integrity. We can't keep hearing lack of fundamentals. They need to get better. And if they don't, you've got to make a significant change. That right now would be about as big of and as significant of a change as you could make defensively is to replace the play caller in Babbage with McDermott.
The only pushback I give on the, you know, letting him grow into the role and, you know, maybe stripping play calling duties is then what's he there for at that point? I mean, he's the defensive coordinator. Like, you hired him to be the defensive coordinator. And the other part of this that I think Sean might have to consider, if this thing doesn't go the way they hope this season, right? And the defense is, again, one of the main culprits of why they don't get to where they want to go. I think Sean has to make a real consideration to bring in a completely different voice to run the defense. Allow him to be the CEO. I think sometimes you run into the problem of coming from a coordinator background and wanting to implement your own scheme and system. I look at Nick Sirianni and what he did in Philadelphia last year, hiring Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator, a completely different philosophy offensively than he had as a coordinator, Sirianni, and they made magic together. And sometimes I think to bring in somebody that can run that side of the ball so you don't have to spend as much time in there if you're not going to be the defensive play caller, that could hold some legs. So we'll see. The other part of this too, Jay, it's one loss. You're not going to go undefeated. I think sometimes it's easy to overreact in the moment. I'm just more talking about some of the things that we're seeing over the first 5 weeks that could potentially snowball over the course of the season.
And Matt, as we usually do here on the final segment, we like to just take a quick spin around the AFC East, or we could expand it to the conference since the division itself is basically a mess, and that continued on Sunday. The Jets dropped to 0-5, get a couple of garbage time touchdowns late against the Cowboys, but not really a competitive game. And then the Dolphins, in their first game without Tyreek Hill, managed to blow a 17-0 lead against Carolina. Pretty good game, actually, kind of back and forth in the fourth quarter. I think three different lead changes, but the Dolphins end up losing to a Panthers team that the Bills will see in a few weeks, and who I think is one of the worst teams in the league, so not a good sign for Miami either. Any quick thoughts on what you saw from the other division teams?
I mean, I think the biggest story right now happening in the conference, outside of a really pitiful AFC East, outside of the Bills and the Patriots, what we saw last night, is the Baltimore Ravens sitting there at 1-4. You know, the uncertainty around Lamar Jackson's injury, I mean, this could snowball itself into maybe a 1-5, 1-6 start. I mean, they've got a couple real tough games still coming up on their schedule. And even if Lamar gets back and is able to play, and maybe he's not 100%, but he's able to go out there, this Baltimore defense, we talked on the show about the question marks around the Buffalo Bills defense. The Ravens defense is in shambles, injuries, guys that are out for the season. Mbeke, who was absolutely electric in that opener, that is a massive loss for the Baltimore Ravens. And if we're talking about the powers of the conference going into the year, Kansas City, Baltimore, Cincinnati, the Chargers even dropping another game with their offensive line issues. It's bad in, you know, coming off of a game like that for the Bills, but in perspective, they're still sitting very pretty. And I'm not all the way bought in on this Indianapolis Colts team that I think is beaten up on a lot of teams that they should beat up on.
Yeah, interesting Monday night game too, right here, because now Kansas City gets a chance to get to 3-2, pull within a game of Buffalo, and if they lose, Jacksonville is 4-1. I'm putting Jacksonville right there with Indianapolis and those teams that, you know, you got to see a little bit more before you're truly buying in. But the idea that the Ravens and Bengals are both in like grave danger of missing the playoffs. I mean, just look at the AFC standings right now, 1 through 7. They're hilarious in some in some ways, right? It's so it's really hard to figure that. But yeah, I think this game tonight, Chiefs Jaguars, when you look at the scope of the AFC playoff race, this is a pretty big early season game that'll be pretty interesting. I think a lot of people in Buffalo will be watching it.
Yeah, you really want the Jags to win, because I think that they're a little bit of fake news. Trevor Lawrence is having a fine season. I think he's a good player in a lot of ways, but I don't necessarily think he's that elite playmaker. And then if you look on the defensive side for the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think if you play them in a playoff game as opposed to going up against Steve Spagnuolo again, for the Chiefs to potentially drop to 2-3 this early in the season, I think would be a really nice thing for the Bills.
He's Matt Parrino, host of the Shout podcast. You can find his work at Syracuse.com. Does a great job covering the Bills day in and day out. Does a great job coaching Little League. Does a great job helping me coach basketball, which he hasn't fully committed to yet. But
we'll putting me on the spot here, Skirsky. I like it.
We'll have that conversation off the air. I'm Jay Skirsky for the Buffalo News. We will be back on Tuesday next week. The Bills play on Monday night against Atlanta, so we will be back Tuesday. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you especially to Matt for joining me this week.